So if y'all want to turn to 1 Kings chapter 12. So if you do not have one of these Old Testament timelines, that's it. Thank you, Ray. Raise your hand, and we're going to have brothers pass these out. Now just take one per family, if you would. And all the singles get their own. I've got 35 if you do not get one. I'm sorry. Do we have any left over? There were supposed to have been 30 something of them. Okay. So if you do not get one, kind of maybe snuggle up to somebody who does have one. Yeah, y'all just snuggle up over there. Okay. On the left side of the page, it says Israel. The right side of the page, it says Judah. This isn't as nice as Alan's because Alan's were all in color. And so some of you can't tell. It's not as good. But if you want color, crayons will solve your problem. I was not paying 50 cents a sheet for each of these for color. Huh? Or you can get color, the color copy on the web. On the left side, if you want to put up in the left-hand corner, I had written Northern Kingdom over Israel. And keep it quiet over there, would you? Got a baby down here. On the left side is the Northern Kingdom, and over on the right side, I think it says Other Kingdom. It's Southern Kingdom. And so a couple of things about this. One is, obviously, if you'll notice in the colors over to the side, it has the different prophets who prophesied during that time. Some of them, it just does say in the Bible, it just simply says a man of God came to Jeroboam and said to him, and it doesn't give his name. So that's why it says that. Some of them are prophets who were minor prophets. For example, Jonah, Amos, Hosea, over on the left-hand side to the kingdom of Israel, were minor prophets to them. Some of the minor prophets are over on the right-hand side. But you'll notice, too, that some of these guys are just prophets who are mentioned in the Bible, and they didn't actually write a book, or a book's not attributed to their name. So they were just mentioned. Some of them were killed by the kings. But that'll give you a pretty good idea who's prophesying at what time. And that's why, as we finish, go through the rest of our study, we're not going to talk about the book of Isaiah. We're not going to talk, for example, about the book of Jeremiah. It's just for you to kind of see where they slip in into the timeline. Does that make sense to everyone? Couple things. If you'll notice over on the kingdom of Israel, and we're going to talk about the split of the kingdom this morning. The kingdom of Israel was basically 10 tribes, and let me clarify that. And the kingdom of Judah was the 2 tribes of Benjamin and Judah. The 10 tribes of Israel are not really the 10 tribes of Israel. It was really 9 tribes. The tribe of Simeon was totally encompassed by the tribe of Judah, and so they pretty much didn't have anything to do with all that, although some of their members did. So if you notice, we had one of those little things that showed how the tribes are divided up. You'll see the tribe of Simeon was in the very middle of the land that had been parceled out to Judah. So they were kind of part of that, but they weren't really part of that. And the same with the 2 tribes of Benjamin and Judah. Part of the Benjamites stayed with the southern kingdom. A big part of them didn't. But we always think 10 and 2, but it's kind of 10 and 2. It's kind of not 10 and 2. Does that make sense to everyone? So, on the left side, the tribe of Israel, those 10 tribes were carried away into captivity by the Assyrians. And we're going to talk about the captivities next week. But they were carried away by the Assyrians. The 2 tribes of Judah, the tribe of the nation of Judah, they were carried away by the Babylonians and Nebuchadnezzar. And we'll talk about that next week as well. And we'll discuss those nations and their power at that time. One other thing, the tribe of Israel, you will see it referred to as Samaria, or the kingdom of Samaria. And that is basically where their capital was. They took over this city, I believe it was called, the guy's name was Shinar or something like that. And his last name must have been Samaria because they named it Samaria. And so sometimes you'll read about the kingdom of Samaria. Well, that's not another kingdom somewhere. That is the tribe of Israel. And what that needs to tell you, too, that the whole thing about the Samaritans, you know, we come to the New Testament, that started long before, that issue started long before the people were brought back from captivity and dropped back into that land by the Assyrians, and then they intermarried, and some were Jews and some were not. That whole issue started back when the kingdom divided between Jeroboam and Rehoboam as to their feelings. So it's kind of not real to say, well, that happened when they came back from captivity. They'd had bad feelings for centuries before that. And so that's why when Jesus goes and talks to the Samaritan woman, it's such a big stinking deal. You know, because Jews don't associate with Samaritans. And basically they were also saying too, the people of Judah don't associate with the people of Israel because of what they did. So that's a much bigger picture than just the coming back from Samaria, the Assyrian captivity, and you know, they're all unhappy with each other. Okay? So is everybody good with this? Okay? All right? And so we'll kind of follow along with this some today, and we'll follow along with it some next week when we talk more about the tribe of Israel. So let's talk about where we are so far. Last week we talked about Solomon, and he's discussed in 1 Kings 2 through 1 Kings 11, and the companion piece to him is 2 Chronicles chapter 1, chapters 1 through 10. And we're not going to talk about that. Solomon, remember his prayer for wisdom. He was known for significant events, his wise decisions. He was known for being a Renaissance man. And you can find out in more detail what kind of guy he was over in the book of Ecclesiastes as to all that he did. And his downfall was because of foreign women. Just like his father's downfall was because of a woman, his downfall was because of women. And just a quick review of where we've gone so far. First Samuel through Second Chronicles. Let's close here. First Samuel has to do with Samuel, Saul, and David. And we've all seen this, but it's out on the web if you want to look at it. Second Samuel, First Chronicles, and First Kings have to do with King David. 1 Kings, 2 Kings, and 2 Chronicles have to do with King Solomon, the divided kingdom, and the captivities. And we're going to talk about 1 Kings and 2 Chronicles today, and then next week we're going to talk about 2 Kings. And the reason I did that was because 1 Kings 2 and 2 Chronicles are more in line with each other in talking about Solomon, and then going into the kingdoms of Judah, whereas 2 Kings talks more about Elisha and the kingdoms of Israel, the different kings of Israel. So that's why we kind of divided that up like that. Okay, the divided kingdom. And starting in 1 Kings chapter 12, Solomon dies, and his son Rehoboam is made king, to be appointed king. Well, he comes forward, and we probably all heard this story if you've been to Bible class any time in your life. This may be new to you if you're not, so don't feel left out. He wants to be made a king, and so he goes to his advisors and he says, "Well, what kind of king should I be?" And he goes to his daddy's advisors. His daddy said, "If you'll treat these people kindly and gently, you know, they'll serve you for the rest of their lives." And so he says, "Well, let me get some more advice." And he goes to all the guys he's been brought up with. Don't seek advice from a bunch of teenagers. God bless them. I love you. You know, if you're a teenager, awesome. But you don't know nearly as much about these things. And parents, don't think they're smart. They're book smart. But they're not like us. They're not street smart. Okay? All right. So think about it like that. But he goes to all these boys that have been brought up, and they said, well, what you want to do is you really want to put the clamps down on these people and threaten them, and they'll do what you say because they're afraid of you. Yeah, that's always great advice for a leader. That always works well. And so Jeroboam, who happened to be the guy that Solomon had picked to help rebuild the walls of Jerusalem, and he's not Rehoboam's twin brother. He's not even related. Because he's been so faithful up to this point, a man of God goes to him and says, God has picked you to be the king of Israel. And so when Rehoboam says, well, I'm going to do this to you. I'm going to put the hammer down on you and run the kingdom this way. The people say, you know, to our tents, O Israel, we're not going to submit to this. And basically Jeroboam becomes their leader. And he takes the, quote, 10 tribes, and they go off here, and the 2 tribes, Judah and part of the tribe of Benjamin, they stick with Rehoboam, and they become the southern kingdom, and the other tribes run up north, and they become the northern kingdom, and they become what's called the divided kingdom. And so right here is Israel, basically this part, and right in here somewhere is Samaria, their capital, and then the southern part here is Judah, and that's the lower tribes. And then these are all the tribes that are around them, and we'll come back to this in just a moment. This is what it looks like in another picture. Here is Israel. You see here Samaria. Here's Judah with Jerusalem. And right here is kind of the dividing line between the two. And then they have all these other nations surrounding them who become basically a thorn in their flesh. Who, now that they're divided, you know, all these other guys say, well, now's the time to strike and to get as much out of this as we can. And so that's what they try to do. And so 1 Kings, what are the significant events of 1 Kings? Well, first of all, Rehoboam versus Jeroboam, which we've just talked about. The second significant event is we're going to talk about the kingdom of Aram just for a moment. And then we're going to talk about Elijah the prophet. So this is what happens in 1 Kings. And I want to bring up about the kingdom of Aram, and it is like right here. And you'll read a lot in 1 Kings about the king of Aram or the Arameans. They play a very big role in the history of, particularly of Israel at this time and part of the northern kingdom. They're the guys who send the raiding bands in. They're the guys who surround the city, you know, and do all these things to Israel during this time and Samaria. And they do some things with Judah down here, but not very much. But you'll see the Arameans mentioned quite a bit. And the reason their role is so significant is they basically have overtaken the Philistines. You remember when we all talked, remember we was going through David and David was fighting Goliath? You remember that? Shake your head like this. Okay, there you go. All right. Those are the Philistines, okay? And he was always, the Philistines were kind of, Judah, when it was still one nation, it was kind of their thorn in the flesh. They were the guys who said, we ain't got anything to do today. Let's go down and raid, you know, Israel. That's kind of was their policy. Well, the Arameans take over that. But it's very significant because they're kind of a lost piece of history. You don't read about the Arameans very much in historical records. But only when it has to do with the Israelites, the children of Israel, and the kingdom of Judah. And so they're kind of an interesting people that nobody really knows very much about, but they are very prominent in what happens down here. Naaman was, he was an Aramean soldier. Okay? So you had to think about things like that as to where all that comes. And you just see their name pop up, and sometimes we just kind of read over it and don't realize who they are, and that's who they were. So let's talk about Elijah. Elijah is the central spiritual character in 1 Kings. And basically, he's known for 3 things that are significant. One is the time when he was fed by the ravens, and God sent him out into the desert, and God took care of him and fed him by ravens by night and day, and he had meat brought to him. I don't know about having birds carry meat to you, but that don't sound good. But they would bring him food in the morning and bring him meat at night, and he had this little creek that he kind of lived here by this little brook, and he was kind of set, you know, for life. you know. But the thing is, I don't know if God got tired of him being out there and said, you know, you really need to become more prophetic. And so he dries up the clouds and the creek doesn't have anything anymore. And so he basically gets him out to doing his prophecies. And just so you know that, God likes to have us have little brooks we can sit by and have birds bring food to us. But he also sometimes dries up the creek. You know what I'm saying? To get you out. Yeah, get going. And he'll use different ways of doing that. But sometimes he'll dry up that creek to get you moving. And there's two really significant events that happened in the life of Elijah. One is his combatant role with Ahab and Jezebel. Now, I went on the images out on the Yahoo images of Jezebel, and I thought, well, I'll show them a picture of Jezebel. They're all R-rated. Just to tell you the truth, I thought, oh, don't put that up there. You're going to be in so much trouble if you show that. And it's funny that people still associate her with someone just being very lewd, very, just kind of, you know, this wild woman, you know. She's always, even when she came to be captured, she painted up her lips and fixed her hair, you know, before they killed her. You know, she's kind of a vain person. And it's kind of interesting today that, you know, in Atlanta we have Jezebel magazine. You know, and every time I hear that, I just kind of go, ooh, that is not good. You don't want to be invited to the Jezebel magazine party they have every year. It's, you know, it's like she's some kind of rock star or something. Yeah, somebody said that. But really, she was a very bad person. She's mean-spirited, hated people. You know, she didn't like you, she'd get you killed. She wouldn't do it, but she'd hire somebody to do it. So Elijah had this constant combatant role with her husband Ahab and Jezebel. In fact, Ahab always called Elijah, you troubler of Israel. He said, oh, here you come, you troubler of Israel. And Elijah would always say, I'm not the troubler, you are. So that was part of their deal. And they were always, there's different stories in the Bible about that, and you can read those. Another big deal about Elijah, though, was the battle on Mount Carmel with the prophets of Baal. And if you want to go to chapter 18 of 1 Kings, we'll kind of look at this real quick. Elijah, he's obviously very spiritual, preaching about God. Well, Ahab and Jezebel, they worship Baal. And so Elijah calls them and he says, why don't you bring all your prophets up here and I'll come up there and we'll create a sacrifice and we'll see who answers. And so in chapter 18, verse 25, Elijah also tells the people, I want you to look in verse 21. Elijah went before the people and said, how long will you waver between the two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him, but if it's Baal, follow him. But the people said nothing because they weren't sure which way they wanted to go with all this. See? And so basically they build this big altar and Elijah says, prophets of Baal, there's 450 of them. Really, there was 450 other prophets. And he says, we'll call for your God to come down and with fire and lick up the altar. And it says in verse, I love this, and I like this part, that's why I'm going to read it. Verse 26, so they took the bull, given them, prepared it, and then they called on the name of Baal from morning till noon. Oh, Baal, answer us, they shouted. But there was no response, no one answered. And they danced around the altar they had made. At noon, Elijah began to taunt them. He's going to talk a little smack, see? Shout louder, he said. Surely he is a God. Perhaps he is deep in thought. Or busy. For busy, it means maybe he's in the bathroom. That's what busy means. Maybe he's in the bathroom right now. Or maybe he's traveling. Maybe he's sleeping and must be awakened. Now you talk about taunting. This is it. So they shouted louder and slashed themselves with swords and spears, as was their custom, until the blood flowed. Midday passed, and they continued their frantic prophesying until the time for the evening sacrifice. But there was no response, no one answered, and no one paid attention. And so everybody goes, let's see what Elijah can do. So he basically tears down their altar, builds a brand new altar, cuts up the oxen on it, pours water on it three times so the water's licked down in the trenches around it, and calls one time to God, and bam! Smokes it immediately. You know, and so all the people all of a sudden, oh yeah, we believe in God. So, and this is the story of Elijah and the prophets of Baal. Go back and read that great story there. Really interesting about Elijah's faith and about, you know, about what God will do if you call on Him. It's just an awesome story there about faithfulness. So that's Elijah. Kind of the way Elijah ends up is, and let's talk about this quick. Elijah basically continues to prophesy against Ahab. He goes and hides and thinks that God, you know, that all life is over with. And God comes to him in a storm. Then he comes to him in an earthquake. And then a small whisper. And God says, Elijah, I have 7,000 people who have not yet bowed the knee to Baal. Great line, I think, in all of the Bible. In fact, if you go into the New Testament, Paul uses that over in Romans somewhere. I forgot where it is, about not bowing the knee to Baal. Uses the same line. And so Elijah's life kind of goes on, and he appoints another man, Elisha, to follow him and be his the next in line of prophets. And so that's kind of how the book of Kings ends up, 1 Kings. But in between all that, and we don't have time, we'll talk about this, go on. You also have some of the different kings between beyond Ahab and the kings of Judah whose names start being mentioned. And we'll talk about those more fully, some this week and some next week. 2 Chronicles. These are the books of the 2 Chronicles. These are the significant events. And if you want to turn over there, and we will come back to 1 Kings, 2 Kings next week. Now, what's 1 Kings about? I mean, what's 1 Chronicles about? Somebody yell it out. Who said it? There you go. It's right, David, right. 1 Kings is about David. It's an expanded version of David as king. So that's why we've already talked about that and won't talk about it anymore. The significant events of 2 Chronicles. Solomon at the very beginning, and we talked about him. We're going to continue on. But there's three significant events here, and we'll talk about two of them, and then we'll talk about the captivities next week. The first one is the good kings. 2 Chronicles primarily has to do with the kings of Judah, both good and bad. And if you'll look back here on your book, on your little handout, really starting with Asa and going all the way down to Zedekiah are the kings of Judah. And this is primarily what 2 Chronicles focuses on. It does not talk very much about the kings of Israel, just kind of a vague reference every once in a while to Ahab and a couple others, but primarily the kings of Judah. And it focuses a lot on the good kings of Judah. Finding the book of the law, which we'll talk about towards the end of the class, a very significant event in the history of Judah, and a great, great lesson for us. And we'll come back and talk about that at the end. Here are the good kings of Judah, and let's talk about them. The good kings of Judah. We're going to talk about the bad kings. Is that okay with everyone? Let's just don't talk about that today. We'll pretend that didn't happen. These are the good kings of Judah. Chapters 15 and 16, Asa. If you want to look in 2 Chronicles 15 and 16. Let's talk about little bits and pieces of each of them. Asa was... He was a great reformer, was his role. He was a great reformer. There have been a lot of things happened bad, starting with Jeroboam, starting with Rehoboam, and then his children, and there were like assassinations and all this sort of thing. And so Asa comes onto the scene, and it says in chapter 14, starting in verse 3, Asa did what was right, good and right, in the eyes of the Lord. He removed the foreign altars and the high places, smashed the sacred stones, and cut down the Asherah poles. He commanded Judah to seek the Lord, the God of their fathers, and to obey His laws and commands. He removed the high places and incense altars in every town in Judah, and the kingdom was at peace under him. He built up the fortified cities of Judah since the land was at peace. No one was at war with him during those years, for the Lord gave rest. And it so goes on to say, he built up the towns and he put walls around them with tower gates and bars. And he did this because he wanted to protect all the people. So Asa was this guy who had seen kind of Judah fall down and become corrupt and the infrastructure, we understand this, don't we? We hear that a lot. The infrastructure basically been destroyed. Well, Asa's this guy who just rebuilds all that. And he commanded the people to worship the Lord. And you may go, well, that's awesome. Well, it's kind of good, but it's also not good. Because he had the... We sometimes will talk about after the first century about King Constantine of the Roman Empire. And Constantine was the guy who wanted to make the Roman Empire into a Christian nation. And people say, well, yeah, were there a lot of baptisms at that time? Yes, there were. Because Constantine said, if you don't get baptized, I'm going to kill you. And so there were lots of conversions to Christianity, by the way. Yeah. So Asa was kind of the same guy. In fact, he says, later on, he says, you know, if you won't, you know, turn back to the ways of God, I'll kill you. And so it was kind of good, but it was kind of not real to get people to follow God. And so he was just a great, great reformer. In chapter 15, it talks about a lot of his reforms, which is really great, and you can read those. But in chapter 16, it does talk about Asa, where he becomes angry with a man of God. Starting in verse 7 of chapter 16, at that time Hanani the seer came to Asa, and he said, because you relied on the kingdom of Aram. Remember Aram? Remember that? Okay. He went to the king of Aram to get him help against an Assyrian attack. Instead of trusting God, letting God fight the battle, he went to get somebody else to help him. So don't rely on worldly people to help you fight evil. Lesson learned. The army of the king of Aram has escaped from your hand. Were not the Cushites and Libyans a mighty army with great numbers of chariots and horses? Yet when you relied on the Lord, he delivered them into your hand. Talking about a previous battle. For the eyes of the Lord drains throughout the earth. And we've heard this, haven't we? The eyes of the Lord reigns throughout the earth to strengthen those whose hearts are fully committed to him. You have done a foolish thing, and from now on you will be at war. Asa was angry with the seer because of this. He was so enraged that he put him in prison. And at the same time, he brutally oppressed some of the people. So he kind of turned near the end of his career because he couldn't handle the truth. So this is a lesson for all of us old people. Okay? Don't think because you're older that you know everything. And all the young people said, amen, thank you. They didn't say anything. And all the young people said, amen. Thank you. Very good. There you go. So continue to learn. Don't think you've got it all figured out. Don't live in the glory days. You know, if you don't believe that, just listen to Bruce Springsteen's song. That'll help you out. Okay, the next king that was good, Jehoshaphat, or Jehoshaphat, however you want to pronounce it. And this is where the phrase jumping Jehoshaphat comes from. What that has to do with that, I have no idea. Somebody look that out and tell me next week. But Jehoshaphat was a great king. Jehoshaphat, he was a very spiritually minded king, though. Okay? Chapter 19, for example, starting, let's see. Hold on. Yeah, in verse 4. It says, Jehoshaphat lived in Jerusalem, and he went out and again among the people from Beersheba to the hill country of Ephraim and turned them back to the Lord, the God of their fathers. He did that. He went out as a king and tried to get people to come back to God. He appointed judges in the land and each of the fortified cities of Judah. He told them, carefully consider what you do, because you're not judging for man but for God who is with you and whenever you give a verdict. Now let the fear of the Lord be upon you. Judge carefully, for with the Lord our God there is no injustice or impartiality or bribery. And he was just a great king. He wanted people to be led. He wanted people to be led in a spiritual way. And that's why he realized he couldn't do it on his own. And that's why he hired all those judges to go out and take care of those matters for him. But he didn't force it upon the people. He just wanted the people to listen to the judges and get it. So he was a great king. He was a great warrior. Great man of battle. In one of my favorite stories is in chapter 20. About when the Moabites and the Ammonites come together and with the Moonites, they came to make war on him. And he goes before God. He's told this vast army's coming. And he goes before God with the people and prays this prayer. And then basically a prophet comes to him and says, don't worry, they'll not defeat you. And he basically takes all these people, a bunch of Levites and the people, and they go out basically to watch the Moabites and Ammonites and the Muites get destroyed. They're not going out to fight. They're just going to go watch and see what God can do. And God wipes them all out. And they come up, it says one day, to where these people are, and they look down and they're all dead. You know, what trust in God. And that's the kind of person he was. He was one of the great kings, Jehoshaphat. He is killed, though, in a battle. He makes an alliance, and I believe that's correct. Didn't he not die in battle? Yeah, it doesn't say. I think it says it over in... Huh?
He made an alliance with Ahaziah, king of Israel.
Right. Okay, all right. Okay, we'll come back. We'll talk about this another time. I'll figure out the answer to that one. The next one, Uzziah. And this may be all time. Yeah, we might can get through two more. Uzziah. Uzziah was also, he was a great military guy. Chapter 26. You'll turn over there. Chapter 26. When Uzziah came on the scene, basically, the people of Judah had just been beaten up a lot by other nations. And so he comes on the scene, and he is a great military leader. And what he does is he restores personal pride in being part of the kingdom of Judah. And I tried to think who was he like, and I thought, for those of us who are older, I thought, that's kind of what Ronald Reagan did. He was kind of the Ronald Reagan of his time. He believed that you simply, if your gun's bigger than their gun, you're going to win. And that's kind of what Reagan did. He said, well, we'll just build up our military forces and we'll run the Russians out of business, which he did. You may not like it. You may think, oh, I think this about Reagan. I don't care. That's what he did, and it worked. And so that's who kind of like Uzziah was like. He said, I'll just build up more military forces and we'll just run all you people out of business. And he did. And he made people proud to be a member of the kingdom of Judah before. Probably like they had not felt in generations. And you say, well, what? I get that. What's the point of it? Look in Isaiah chapter 6. Because Isaiah was a prophet during his time. And there's a verse we read a lot, but we kind of read the first part of it and really don't think about what it means. Isaiah chapter 6 and verse 1. And this is when Isaiah gets his commission from God. And it says, in the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord seated on the throne, high and exalted, and the train of his robe filled the temple, and so forth. And what Isaiah is trying to say here is, this was a significant event when he died because the people thought, oh no, what's going to happen next? And Isaiah says, I saw Uzziah died, but I also saw that God was still in control. And I think what we need to remember is, it does not matter who's in control of the nations. God is in control of the people who run the nations. God runs the nations. And those of us who worry and fret about who's going to be president or who's not going to be president, who our senators are going to be, who's not going to be our senators, all that stuff, take a deep breath and quit worrying about it. Okay? You know, every time we get near a political campaign, somebody says it's the most significant political campaign of our generation. I've heard that every presidential election since I started paying attention about 1964. It does not matter. Now, if you want to campaign for somebody, knock yourself out. I'm happy. God bless America. But it does not matter because God is in control. So let's all remember that, especially as November starts to creep upon us, or November next year, I guess is correct. Okay, next year. I thought, is it that soon? Maybe it's not. Okay, so he's the next great king. The last great king, or the next last great king, you'll go back to chapter 29 of 2nd. Where are we at? Jake's so confused. 2nd Chronicles, Jake's. And you find out a lot about Asa, all of his stuff is in, Uzziah in chapter 26. Now, over in the book of Kings, he's called what's he called? He's called by another name. It's not Uzziah. Azariah? I can't remember. He's called by something else over in the book of Kings. So if you'll see that, you'll say, I thought his name was Uzziah. Well, he obviously had two names. So Hezekiah, we'll do him, then we'll come back to it. We'll start Josiah next week. Hezekiah is in chapter 29 through 32. Hezekiah is one of the three great kings of Israel. And I'm talking about the whole nation now. David, Solomon, and Hezekiah. Chapters 29 through 32. Hezekiah is like, he is like the most spiritual of all the kings. His focus lasts pretty much from beginning to end of all the kings. And he does spiritual things. Now, Jehoshaphat was wonderful in that he established, you know, the judges and all that. But Hezekiah, chapter 29, he purifies the temple. The temple's fallen into disrepair. He purifies it. They clean it up in about 7 weeks. When they're not working on it fast enough, he brings all the Levites and guys and he says, what's going on here? Why are you so slow in doing this? He is focused on the right thing. Chapter 30, they celebrate the Passover. They have not celebrated the Passover in years. Generations didn't know what it was. And he calls upon them to celebrate the Passover. And he's the kind of guy, too, that some people come in and they celebrate the Passover wrong. They're doing the wrong thing in celebration. And he appeals to them, appeals on their behalf before God. He says, God, I know, but would you please cut them some slack? And God says, I sure will, because I know their hearts are good. He's the one in chapter 31 who gets the contributions for worship. They need money, and so he helps them collect the money and then tells them how to use the money. I mean, he's just very focused on the right thing. You go over to chapter 32, and kind of the really great last great event of his life when Sennacherib, the Assyrian warlord. You guys still hear me? Yeah, it's good. Sennacherib, the Assyrian warlord, comes and he wants to destroy them. And Hezekiah handles that the right way. He prays. He doesn't go build alliances with somebody else. He doesn't do all the things we would expect him to do. He simply prays for God to deliver them. And God does in a dramatic way. But he is that guy, very spiritually focused. Now, at the end of his career, he kind of had some issues about being prideful. And then again, he is forgiven. And God blesses him, which just shows, you know, the Bible's wonderful. It shows everything, doesn't it? It's just awesome about the Bible. But he is just like a great, great king. And you need to think of him in the same terms of David and Solomon. And sometimes he's kind of really not talked very much. But go back and read chapters 29 through 32, and you will be impressed with this man about how much he loved God because he stayed focused on what was spiritual. And because he was so focused on what was spiritual, even when he did some stupid stuff at the end of his career, that God forgave him because he stayed focused on the right thing. And so those are the great kings of Judah. We got one more to do. We'll pick up with Josiah next week. But Asa, Jehoshaphat, Uzziah, and Hezekiah. We've gone just a little bit longer, so walk fast to get your children. See you next week.